Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Lowell Robinson. Lowell is a senior producer of voice and AI for KQED. KQED is the public broadcaster for the San Francisco Bay Area, which includes both radio and television and some voice experiences we're going to talk about today. Lowell and KQED have been very innovative with voice and audio, and I'm super excited to talk to Lowell today. Lowell, please introduce yourself.
Well, Roger, I'm so happy to be able to talk about technology and voice and what we're both interested in. So as senior producer for voice and AI, there is a lot that we do playing around, and I use the word play in a sort of imaginative, where can this space go way with voice. And the AI aspect is more about that a lot of the content that we consume right now is algorithmic. We're grabbing a lot of things that are on demand. We have playlists that are dynamically generated. We're grabbing content that might be out of context. And so it's really thinking about how do you produce content in a space like that, and what are the tools and methods that we need to bring into production to be able to have that work with our lives.
Interesting point about so many things being automated here. Philosophical question to start off. Is that a good thing?
Well, good that, I mean, I think that that's a challenging question just to say, is something good or bad?
Sure.
I think that we definitely have the idea of what is our relationship to technology. So if I turn on the radio, I am adjusting what frequency I'm tuning into. That's my choice. But what's being played, I do not control that, right? I'm like, oh no, I connect with this broadcaster. I want to hear what they have to say, and I can change with that. So when we're talking about algorithmic playlists, when we're saying like, hey, this Spotify isn't always the same for me, right? It keeps on adjusting for me. It's, yeah, Spotify is a choice that you've made. It's made adjustments on top of that. And so understanding that technology will allow me to feel more empowered. I think that there's places where there's a black box and it's more manipulative. And that it would probably be the part where I say, no, I don't want it to be more manipulative, but I do want it to coexist with what we have. Like, maybe I only have enough time for this, but I want to hear this. So how can that fit in my life? Do I need to hear the morning broadcast right now? Or am I a late riser and I still want to be caught up on the day's news? So in that way, it's a yes, it works.
You know, interesting. I was thinking about the Spotify example, and that's such a good one because old school, right? Was the DJ made all the decisions for you? Listen to the radio, the DJ is going to decide. And so nothing was personalized. Well, it was personalized for the DJ, what the DJ liked, which was good because I've discovered things that, I mean, I'd never heard before. But on the other hand, with Spotify, essentially, I'm the DJ. The AI is making me the DJ and choosing some things for me, which I think is awesome because it's personalized to me. And yet, maybe I don't discover, you know, that kind of serendipity of discovering something that I'd never heard before. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. This is something I experienced with my teenage daughters. Despite the fact that we have a lot of years between us, sometimes they play some music. I'm like, oh, who is this? This is really interesting, right? So yeah, it's that kind of question as the AI personalizes for you, which is awesome. But are we missing some serendipity there? I don't know.
I also think that what if you were able to, I don't know, control the amount of serendipity? If that was a variable where it'd be like, Rogers, he loves serendipity. So in this one, it's what we think you want, but we're going to go outside of those parameters, those bounds. And we're going to say, this is somebody that's wants to shake it up a little bit more. It's like, it's Roger with a teenage daughter and wants to be surprised and look cool later at dinner by surprise, you know, and suggesting some songs that nobody else knew. So I think that those types of algorithms can be adjusted to work with us in that way, because maybe we want something very straightforward. Like, I only want, it has to be 80s. Otherwise, I'm not listening. Versus, actually, this is something that sounds like the 80s, but it was made in 2020.
I was thinking as you were saying that, it's interesting. And maybe depending on my mood or time of the day, right? Probably when I'm stuck in traffic, I probably want the old rock classics that I love, right? Because they kind of make the time go. But if I'm more, maybe in a less stressful kind of situation, maybe I'm more open to serendipity. It'd be interesting to either choose that for me or actually have a dial, right? To go, hey, how experimental are you feeling, right? Today. Cool stuff. I did want to back up though. We got jumped right in and talk a little bit more about you and what you've done. Tell me more about, so you talked about KQED and voice and AI. Tell me a little bit more about KQED and voice and AI and what's happening there.
Well, I do think that we are in a space right now that while over-the-air broadcast is absolutely a tremendous part of our life, there's no mistaking that the digital aspect, especially in a place as, let's say, the Bay Area, which is very digitally focused, is to try to think about, like, how do these tools, how do these methods, how do these programs, how does that fit with our life and how can that work? So the idea is, do I want to just, maybe it is something where I'm like, I need you to curate it for me, but I still want to be able to adjust what I'm hearing in this way. I need more arts programming in my life. I need more sports. I absolutely don't want to hear about the Clippers, whatever it might be. Now, we don't go to that type of specificity, but I do think that it's important for organizations to imagine what those possibilities could be, what people are imagining that they want. A lot of times there's this idea where we think we want more control, but we're pretty happy with, like, I don't need to skip. Wow, whoever that was that figured out that Spotify playlist for me, like, good for you. I love this. But I think organizations and individuals have to better understand the technologies that we're getting into. KQED as a public broadcaster is very much in terms of transparency. And so I think that part of my role is really to take a look at these technologies and to say, like, where do we want to go there as an organization, but also bring to light some of the issues that we're sort of talking about in terms of the nature of AI. So my role is kind of between content and product. And so while a lot of the prototypes that I make could be thought of as in a product way, the content is usually about so many of these topics that we often talk about, like synthetic voice. What does it mean when a computer sounds exactly like us? What does it mean if something was so dialed in that this is exactly what I want to hear, but I'm missing this other part of the story? Issues like that, probably a lot closer to some of the big questions that you came up with at the beginning, is something good or bad? And not so much saying, hey, this is good or bad, but how can we all take a look at this and think about how to move forward?
Interesting. It struck me, thinking about KQED or companies like that, there's so much content there, right? Your cuppeth overflowing with content. And you obviously have your step programming, right? Where you can go listen on the radio or TV, this content, but that's just a fraction of the content available. And so when you talk about voice and this interactivity, maybe it's a way to expose more of that content or get away another way for me as a consumer to say, hey, I'm interested in, I like sports. I like the Warriors. I don't like the Clippers. Tell me more about the Warriors, not about the Clippers, right? But, you know, to kind of expose some of that content. Whereas if I was just listening more passively to the radio or TV, I might never see that content or may never be exposed to.
I think that what KQED sees itself as is as a source of information to both inform and inspire the Bay Area. And so it really isn't the idea that, like, this is the only thing that you would like to hear and we want that, but what might be a tool, what might be a digital format that would allow you to be able to go deeper into an idea. So let's say, not so much, this is my own take because we haven't really talked about what the Warriors filter might look like, but we're not talking about the Timberwolves, but I would say that if you could dig down deeper into a story, how interesting might that be for you? That you could have a story, but like you could directly ask, but I want to know more about this. I want to be able to go in deeper to a story. I want to understand this idea. One of the projects that I wanted to talk to you about was the California Proposition Guide.
Okay.
So here's something where news organizations have kind of this tremendous responsibility and, of course, the public's trust to be able to talk about elections and try to come at them at a way where you're looking at it with really, how can I understand this so I know where my what my vote's going to be? And so propositions in California can be quite confusing, and people do proposition parties and they'll get together and they'll say, like, how are you voting for this? And so one of our first voice projects that we did for 2020 for the California propositions was the ability for you to be able to talk to your device, ask about a proposition, ask what a yes or no vote meant, ask who supported it, be able to find out more information about it, that you could dig down. And one of the tremendous, I think, things about voice and the fluid part when you were sort of talking about discoverability in search is that you don't have to know exactly what you're asking for. You could ask for something that kind of sounds like it, you know, like you're like, what about the one where it's teens get to vote? You don't know the number, you don't know the description. And we can use that vocal search interface to be able to bring that up. And then you can dig down, but I want to know what is that and who supports that? I think that's a limited set in terms of propositions where we can do that with voice. We can't do that with all news. We can do that with something that we have a very limited set, see where that is, but it's a pretty powerful experience. And for me, I think it's one of the more interesting use cases for things in the future.
Wow, I love that example, because I was just thinking of the propositions. And one, you get in the mail, you get that flyer, right? And it's full of the arguments for and against and the legalese behind the propositions. And I mean, those things are hard to read. And you can look it up on the web now too. But what you really want, I love your example of what about the one of teens voting, right? Which I think was a recent proposition there. I don't, for the heck of me, I couldn't remember what number that is. But that's an interesting, like that kind of thing could be very interesting to me. And I want to understand more pros and cons and what it would do and how it would change it. And it strikes me as a voice interface in front of that is an ideal way. It's kind of filtering and getting to the information I want without overwhelming me with 12 pages of legalese, right? Around this is what this proposition is. It's, well, maybe I want to know a summary, or maybe I do care about page 10 of those 12 pages. There's something in there that I want, but I tell you, I'm not going to read the first 9 pages to get to the 10th. So I like that. So with a limited, kind of that limited subset of information, by putting a voice interface on top of it, you're letting people kind of explore that information in a very human way, instead of like a conversation, right? If you were an expert in the propositions, I could ask you a bunch of questions. Well, let's bring that, kind of democratize that and be like, okay, this voice assistant is a, I don't know if expert's the right word, but it sure knows how to narrow down what I was looking for.
So let me explain it just a tiny bit more. So you're using the voice interface to find it, and then you're hearing from the reporters themselves to talk about it.
Okay.
So they have created small explainers that are in audio format for you to be able to hear them, because it really makes sense to hear from the reporters that are truly subject matter experts to talk about the thing that they're describing both sides to you, right? They've spent the most time, they've been looking at this, not since they got the flyer, they've been looking at this for a long time. And so it's not that in this case where the assistant is like grabbing from some knowledge graph or trying to like pull this together. These are pre-produced pieces with a voice interface for you to be able to then get to it. So
got it. Good clarification. I'm asking subject matter experts and then playing back their view on these things. I love that. So you've been at KQED for several years. Were you brought on to start the voice initiative, or is that something that came on after you started?
No. So I've been at KQED for 3 years.
Okay.
I was brought on initially. It was part of the funding came from the Google News initiative, which was trying to just get more technologists into newsrooms to sort of think about that. But my role is not that. I mean, that's where it came from. I definitely feel that KQED, most likely because it's in the Bay Area, has always been very forward thinking about what's the future of news, what's the way that we want to be able to relate to community-based radio. And one of the things that struck me was when I was walking around the newsroom and hearing all these voices that I knew so well, and it was really strange for me to see bodies connected to them, is that much of the Bay Area feels the same way. radio is a very intimate type of experience, and you bring these voices into your life every day. And I was like, wow, obviously voice is audio based. It really promotes that idea. And well, what would that be like if you was back and forth? Mm. What could that be like if, you know, we're not at a point where we're asking reporters directly a question, but how does it feel to be able to put a question back on somebody that's listening? And so a lot of the content pieces that we've also developed have been playing with that idea where you might hear something, it might ask you a question to help you along with the listening that you're doing to imagine what that experience could be like. So another project that I wanted to tell you about that I thought was really interesting was just at the beginning of the pandemic, right after the California lockdown. We're all working remotely. It's a very strange time. We don't know anything of what's coming with a novel virus and what the future is. And being asked to isolate, we thought about making a story about people that really excelled about being isolated themselves. Like Californians that really excelled being on their own, living isolated lives. We did these interviews. One was with a backcountry ranger at Bodie. I don't know if you've ever been to Bodie.
I've not been, but I know that is a remote place.
That's somebody who understands social isolation pretty yes. well. And when you get to hear this story, the interesting thing that we tried to do in terms of an interactive voice story was ask you questions as well. And your answers could actually, if you allowed it to, could contribute to content for future listeners. So it became part of the news story that you heard, but it also gave you a chance to sort of reflect at a time where we were all probably pretty introspective and reflective about what was important to us and what did it mean. And I think that voice has that power in terms of storytelling as a medium. Most people don't experience it that way. And that's probably one of the places where we're doing more R&D type style projects to imagine what could this be.
Awesome. I love that. We're going in isolation. Let's talk to people who live that. I'm going to send like an ad for QED, but I can't help myself. I grew up in the Bay Area. My parents used to flip on the pledge drive, right? I don't know if they still have those. This is where they're raising money and on TV and they do these things there. And they went and volunteered and even answered some of the phones there. But really, it is a pretty important voice for the Bay Area. It's darn well known and it's always done really interesting content and programming. And I like what you're saying is we're keeping it relevant with all the technology advances by taking this technology, which has a lot of promise. We're going, okay, well, how do we, sounds like this is your job and tell me, there's this really cool tech that can do these interesting things. And then I have this business who creates all this amazing content and has these amazing reporters and really is a big voice for the Bay Area. How do I marry those two together and create something new and unique and innovative between the marriage of the tech and the content?
I think you said it perfectly, Roger. I'm going to copy and paste that and play that back for people when people ask me what I do.
There we go. All right. And I just have to inject this that before you were at KQED, you were at the Exploratorium, which is just one of the coolest places I know in the Bay Area. I went there as a kid. Tell me a little bit of the Exploratorium, what you did there.
Well, at the Exploratorium, I also thought a lot about technology. And I think that the idea of our relationship to technology, and I do think it is very much the same idea that how do we feel more empowered and connected to like, how can this help us understand the world? I think the Exploratorium does that through science and art. And so I was trying, again, in that same way that you sort of described with KQED, was thinking about, okay, science and art and technology, what types of experiences might we want to build, merging those together, where I would come out of this feeling more empowered. And of course, it's a hands-on museum. So it was sort of like, what does that mean in certain circumstances, right? We're not looking for passive experiences. We're looking for something that we want to have an interchange with.
Yeah, the Exploratorium. It's like this wonderland of just cool stuff you can play with. And it's good. It's for the young or the young at heart. Because I've taken my kids there and they're like, Dad, we're ready to go to the next thing. Right? Because I still love it and loved it as a kid. So very cool stuff. Hey, we were talking about some of the KQED voice experiences, and I wanted to jump in, and you've already talked about a few of them. But one I wanted to ask you about was called Human or Machine. Tell me about Human or Machine.
So Human or Machine came from an earlier project that, so just to jump back just a little bit so I can then jump forward. The very first voice interactive that we created was the VoiceBot Chronicles.
Okay.
The voice.
Why don't you talk about the VoiceBot Chronicles then? We can go in chronological order. Perfect.
Sure. Well, they kind of come in sequence for me.
Okay.
So the VoiceBot Chronicles was really, we all talk to these devices in our life. And I think there's this kind of question of, does it understand me? Like I keep on saying this, the same invocation, or I keep on saying the same thing to the machine. And it's not turning on the lights. I think I heard a colleague of mine who was had two younger children, and one of the children was understood by, you know, their voice assistant, and the other child was not. For whatever it was in terms of the NLU, the natural language understanding, like it picked up on one person and not the other. And so one child felt incredibly empowered, right? Like they could control this mysterious technology, turn on the lights, whatever. The other one, totally not understood. And we know that as an industry, there's been a lot of refinements in terms of being able to understand different voices and different accents, be able to do different languages and be understood. And at the very beginning of looking at this about 3 years ago, and of course, this issue had existed well before that, it was pretty much trying to get listeners to think about their relationship to their devices and how well they are understood. But while we do oftentimes connect that to these objects of, hey, this doesn't understand me, I kind of have that question of who does understand you? Right. Because not everyone, I could be talking right now and there's people that are listening and saying, I really don't know what you're saying, Lowell. You're using words, but I haven't quite followed that idea. And so are we extending something to machines that even as human beings, we're like, no, I need a follow-up question there. I really don't understand what that is or why our significant other, oh yeah, I know them. I understand what they're saying here, but not this other person. And so we tried to go through different circumstances of both human relationship and technology relationships with interactive voice experiences to see how well you could be understood by the machine. And maybe if we could, what did the machine understand? So there was a particular one where we have a sequence where you're asked some words for you to say some words back, and then the machine will try to say it back to you, how well it did. It's kind of a fun thing. I think she tried out, actually.
All right. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try it out. So we'll take a little bit, not a commercial break. It's a voice break to go and listen to this recording of me trying out the VoiceBot Chronicles. Alexa, start the VoiceBot Chronicles.
This is KQED. Hello, I'm Chloe Veltzman, a reporter here at KQED. And while I still don't get to go out on reporting assignments in a flying car yet, I do get to chat with you through a voice bot.
Thanks, Chloe. I'm really excited to be here. But what about our listener? Are you ready to start?
Yes.
Great. Chloe, why don't you tell us what this is all about?
This is the VoiceBot Chronicles, an interactive series from KQED, telling stories about and in collaboration with the machines we find ourselves talking to these days. Now, here's the fun part. It's not like a regular KQED story where you just listen. As we go along, you'll get opportunities to interact with us through your device, like exploring what happens when a conversation breaks down.
Wait a sec. What the what?
As I was saying, this is totally experimental, and because of that, things may not always go as planned.
Well, Chloe, I'm all in on this experiment. And if our listeners ever need help, all they need to do is say, Alexa, help.
How about we start with a proper introduction?
That's a great idea. I'd love to know who you are. Can you tell me your first name?
Roger.
Nice to meet you, Roger. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes.
So tell me this, do most people understand you when you say your name is Roger?
Yes.
Roger, I came up with a game for us to play. I'm going to ask you to repeat a word that is hard for some people to say, but not everybody. Then I'll let you know what I heard. Here's your first word. Can you say drawer for me? Like I'm going to open the drawer. To start, just say my word is drawer.
My word is drawer.
You got it right. Or should I say we both did our part? You said it, and I heard it. Drawer. Okay, let's try something spicy. Say my word is cinnamon.
My word is cinnamon.
Sugar and spice, I heard cinnamon correctly. You're a star. This one is both. Sphygmomanometer. Yes, you heard me right. Sphygmomanometer. Just say my word is sphygmomanometer.
My word is sphygmomanometer.
Just say my word is sphygmomanometer.
My word is sphygmomanometer.
Did that word raise your blood pressure? If it did, you could measure it with a sphygmomanometer, which is what most of us call a blood pressure cuff. Unfortunately, what I heard was sphygma anemometer, not sphygmomanometer.
Okay, that was really interesting. Wow, that's a... Who understands me? I just experienced a voice trying to understand me. But you had a great point, Lowell, about do people understand me or not? And this gets a little bit, when I think about this, I think about one of the challenges of voice is all the nonverbal communication. If you say something and I kind of ponder or scratch, you know, there's all kinds of nonverbal things where you can go, oh, he's not really understanding me. Let me rephrase, or I'm forgetting what linguistics call it, not a correction, but it's something where I didn't understand you. So I kind of go, what? You know, there's these things where then you can correct, which we don't have with machines yet, at least. But I don't know. That's fascinating to play with. Coming from the voice industry, we try to make everything understand everything. And of course, it doesn't. And I love the idea of playing with that a little bit and saying, okay, what does it understand? What did it think you said or didn't say? That's a cool experience. I love it.
I'm so glad to get to try it out.
So we're talking about, does a voice assistant understand me or not, using VoiceBot Chronicle? I guess the flip side might be, am I talking to a machine? Am I talking to a person? I think you have an experience around that. Why don't you tell me about that?
Yes. So human or machine is kind of whether we're in the uncanny valley or we're leaving the uncanny valley or we sort of dip our toe in the uncanny valley every once in a while, we're pretty used to this idea where we say that's a robotic voice, or at least you and I do because we grew up watching a lot of sci-fi and we're used to that idea of a robotic voice. But what happens when robots sound a lot more like us? And so this experience of human or machine is set up as a story, or more of like a story and a game, where you get to sort of guess if a voice is human or machine, but not just, okay, you're right or wrong. The idea is for you to really travel on this idea of this history of a synthetic voice. So you've kind of been trying to synthesize voice both mechanically and more recently for the past 50 or odd years electronically, but we've always wanted to recreate voice. And so it's not a new thing for us, but our relationship changes quite a bit depending on what voice the machine has.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to go check that out. So let's listen to me trying to talk to human or machine and see how well I do. Alexa, start human or machine.
This is KQED.
Hi, welcome to Human or Machine, the uncanny game from KQED that explores synthetic voice.
Hi.
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 Before we go any further, what should I call you?
Roger.
Roger, did I get that right?
Yes.
Perfect. I understood you. You understood me. We are off to a great start. Okay. Let's go over the basics. Roger, you're talking to a machine right now. Do you talk to machines a lot?
Yes.
Now officially, I'm not going to say you're my favorite, but... You are. Roger, Here's how the game works. I'm going to play a selection of voices for you. Some of these recordings will be from real people, and some will be digitally synthesized, made by machine. You'll then get to guess if the voice was human or machine. Are you ready to play?
Yes.
Get ready, Roger. From the Silicon Plains and valleys of your own device, let's play the game that turns the existential crisis of identity into a fun time. Human or machine? Roger, do you find most machine voices easy to recognize?
Yes.
I'm excited by your confidence. We're going to start off easy, but don't worry, it will get harder as the game moves on. Our game is made up of 10 voices, and I'll play them one at a time. Here's your first voice.
How are you? I love you.
So tell me, Roger, what do you think? Human or machine?
Machine.
You're right. That was a machine. In fact, a very old one from 1953 developed by Gunnar Fons, and it was called the Ove Cascade Forman Synthesizer. I loved that voice, and if you did too, you can hear it again just by saying repeat. Otherwise, say continue.
Continue.
Roger, I've been really impressed with your listening skills so far. I have 3 more voices for you, starting with this one.
The human voice is the most beautiful instrument of all, but it is the most difficult to play.
So, was that voice human or machine?
Human.
It sure did sound like a human, but it was actually machine. I did mention this was going to get harder. So whether it was me playing an example of state-of-the-art vocal synthesis, or that robots can distract you when they are overly complimentary towards the human voice, be on the lookout.
Well, that was interesting. You know, it strikes me, I've been in some conversations on Twitter Spaces and Clubhouse, and some voice actors have come in and they've been like, oh my gosh, is this end of my career? Because the voices are really good now. Even compared when we grew up, right? It was Jetsons like robot voices. But I've always been struck by the problem, the challenge with mechanical voices is they speak and enunciate really well. But unless they understand the content they're reading, they don't say it the way a human would. The AI has to understand, hey, this is exciting. So I'm going to talk in an excited voice. Or this is more dull and drab, and I'm going to talk this more serious voice there. But made me exaggerate it, change my voice a little bit there, thinking about how I might read or talk to someone depending upon what I'm trying to express. And I just don't, to me, I don't think the machines have quite gotten there where they, if they understand the content well enough, to change the enunciation, the speed, all those vocal things to really mimic a human. You agree with me?
I do. I mean, I think that, let's say there's a lot of new tools for doing text-to-speech and adjusting prosody, and you can make things sound quite human. For me, I think the bigger issue, besides the idea of, hey, that isn't automatic because it doesn't understand the context, is that context is pretty much everything. And so if a machine sounds incredibly human, there is that expectation that it has maybe a level of intelligence that it doesn't have, right? We're not, we're not talking about AGI here. We're talking about pattern recognition for the most part. And so all of a sudden we have this incredible robot that sounds incredible. And I feel like I'm having this very fluid conversation and it really has no idea about what I'm saying. It just picked up on a couple key words that I had. So there's the argument that if the machine sounds too human, we've raised the expectation to a place where it shouldn't be. And we should really think of it as a machine and a machine at where it is in terms of today's technology. Now, people listening to your podcast are familiar with that space, but for the majority of the world, they're not thinking about what level can these machines understand what I'm talking about in terms of context. And so I think I'll admit to a kind of an embarrassing story. Yeah, I think I'm going to do this. Yeah. So when Evernote first came out, I didn't realize that there were human beings that were doing transcription for Evernote. I thought it was completely, you know, machine learning based. And so I was trying some really challenging sort of text translations of just nuanced English, You know, like, how can I bear that bear has no hair and this bear with the hair, that kind of thing. And if I knew that there was a human being that was there suffering with whatever my impromptu like challenge, like I would have never done it. Right. But I think that there is that part with when we don't know what the black box is, that's the expectation. The front end is so important. And I think that's where the challenge of like, how human should this sound? I think that right now, making that sound more human is problematic at this moment for a couple different reasons. One, I think in terms of the expectation, but I think another part in terms of what is our relationship to technology? Should it be emotionally responding to me like it can? Is that what I need? Is that the relationship? And again, I think there's a lot of different use cases. So I don't think there's a one shoe fits all kind of thing for this. But for me, my issue isn't as much that can we adjust prosody to make it even better? I think we still need to look at a lot of the underlying issues.
Good point. So Evernote's turnover in translators was your direct fault.
Yes.
There we go. Now, mystery solved for Evernote. Why did all these people leave? They're trying to translate because this crazy guy was putting voice in there and trying to trick me.
I've never put it out there before. So,
all right. Well, there we go. Yeah. Mystery is solved. What a great point. You nailed on the head one of the challenges of the voice industry is the more one of the amazing things that we're talking about this prior to when we started the podcast. So I was like, I'm so excited about voice because it's the way now the machine needs to understand me instead of me understanding the machine. It's really the first computer interaction technology that made the machine understand. But the problem there is I have pretty high expectations of understanding with my voice, right? Because humans, we're amazing at it. We can infer all these things. We know things that have happened in the past, et cetera. And the machine really, although the AI is amazing, I like to say the AI is amazing, but it's still really crude because it really doesn't understand some of these things. And so the user experience is, oh, I'm talking to it. Well, why doesn't it understand me? Because everybody else I talk to understand, you know, humans understand it. You're right. The expectation setting when you use what was a uniquely human way of interacting with a machine is really, 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 really challenging. And I would argue you nailed one of the biggest challenges in the voice industry is it can do all these cool things. Yeah, it can. Now, there's a different debate about whether it should, but also it can do these things, but does it actually work with all these different things? Does it understand me? And as soon as it doesn't understand me, I mean, I've had these discussions with my teenagers about, they're like, ah, they're okay, but they are not really smart because they don't understand what I want it to do. And so until the AI gets a lot better about understanding, there's a lot of headwinds there around understanding, around truly setting expectations around what does and doesn't work. And I think the voice assistant industry has maybe not done itself so many favors by having these fanciful ads where you can do all this cool stuff. And then you go pick up your phone, you're like, that doesn't work. And for the okay, I'll probably try it again and probably say it in a different way because I want it to work. But the average Joe is going to be like, oh, that stuff doesn't work. I'm done with it. And then we have a challenge in the industry of we've set expectations too high. So I think you're spot on.
I think even with like really simple binary type of commands, right? Let's say for the most part, I just want to be able to play and pause. A lot of things mm-hmm. could be done with play or pause. And certainly if my hands are full, makes sense. From a utility standpoint, or I can just call over and say play or pause. But like even something like that, we think, I'm going to just throw out a little bit more Star Trek geek for you. I think about how many ways like different captains start the Enterprise, right? There isn't just one way to, right? And it's like, even in the more recent one that they've done with the throwback to Pike, where he's hit it, like your device today would not understand it if you said hit it, right? So even if we keep it into something simple, like this, and I'm like, yeah, that's my fun way to listen to music, right? Like, I don't want it to say play. I'm like, hit it. It's like, that's not going to work. And I can't adjust it. And I can't give it like a custom invocation for what I want. So it's not so much like it needs to understand me in all circumstances. But in order for me to be able to relate to it, I think even in these simpler ways, the idea of me able to have my personality there, for me to be able to have my way of how I want to communicate, even if it's only a single word, I think would do a lot for the idea of us and how we connect to voice.
Would you envision this, though, is if I said hit it and it said, so we know what happens now. Sorry, I can't do that. Or sorry, I don't understand, right? It's like the generic error message. What do you think of something that learned that said, oh, sorry, I didn't understand, hit it. What did you want me to do? Right. And then maybe that would help personalize. Do you think that would help? Or
I think that would, if you felt that by you explaining what you wanted and spending the effort to explain it, that would become what it would do. Right. If it was like, if you were to explain, spend all your time with your device and say, what I really wanted you to do with this. Yeah. And I was like, I'm not sure I understand, but I really meant this. And I was like, and you went through all of that. And then your machine's like, I can't do that. You're like, wow, I will never do that again. I will never spend that effort. So I think a lot of the time when we spend with devices and we're saying something and we're not understood and it doesn't feel like it's getting any better, there's sort of like, how much time do I want to spend training this model, right? And so it is this idea where we need technology both to give us the positive feedback loop that like it understood, that it didn't get it, that it wants to do better. And then, hey, here's my next try. Did I get it this way? And actually, it was something that we tried to bring into our interactives, even with the simple aspect at the beginning of all of our interactives, when we're asking a name, which is, how often does it get your name right? Like, names are hard. Our names, the way we say names are, and then if it doesn't get it right, like with the VoiceBot Chronicles, the very first question you get, if it doesn't get it right, it immediately asks, do other people get it right? Right? Is it just a machine that doesn't get it right? Or do you have a name that's really hard? You know, do you have an unusual name that fits into that space? I think that's part of our idea of like, how do we relate to these things? Right now, the devices are pretty much just all takers, not givers at all. So we're just constantly throwing it out there, never tries to correct or get better. And of course, unless you're a diehard technologist, you get frustrated with that. And at a certain point, you're like, enough.
You know, it strikes me is the other ways we interact with a computer. If I click my mouse or hit something on my keyboard, I have really high expectations. Like most of the time, 99.9% of the time, it does exactly what I want it to do. Right. And in AI, right, it's very constrained. There's a button. When I click that button, there's one thing that button is going to do. And so my expectation, my expectations are technology is a bit of a, I don't know what the right servant, I don't know what the right word is, but it definitely, it's command and control, right? I do something and something happens. If you had to teach it with voice, and boy, one, that would be a lot of extra effort. But then if it doesn't work, it's really broken, right? It gets back to this expectations around. So if you were saying something and I didn't understand it, I might ask, hey, can you explain that in a different way? Or can you rephrase that? Or there's some human ways of basically saying, please say that again, right? I didn't understand that. But the chances are we're pretty good, right? On the second take, right? I'm going to get what you said. The AI and the machine, there's just nowhere near that, right? And so that could be a really, yeah, good point. Training it could be even more frustrating than having it, in a sense, not understand you, because now it's like, I made this effort and it doesn't work. I hadn't thought of that.
Well, just think about anybody in your life that you've spent that extra effort. And how many times are you willing to sort of talk about something that means something to you, where it could be that you need to teach it in a new way. You need to be able to maybe be able to help them understand it in a new way, or they're really not listening. In which case, if you feel like that other person is really not listening, you don't want to put the effort. I think that right now we feel like the machine's not listening. You know, it's, I mean, I don't necessarily feel like, you know, like it has it out for me, like it doesn't want that. But I do think that what's our relationship to this part of, it's supposed to be personal, it's supposed to be connected, but I don't feel like it's listening to me in the way that I want to be heard. It's more, hey, I got to fit it into, this is the way that you need it. And maybe that's where we have to go before we can move on. But when we were tracking it back to the idea of a voice, one that sounds even more human sounding, I think let's say the voice became incredibly personal to us, right? Like it was a voice that was actually reminded us of somebody that was like really significant in our lives. Like then it could really start to feel quite hurtful that you were being ignored, right? Because we sort of connect to it. So I think voice is tremendously powerful. I think it has a tremendous responsibility to hold to a higher standard because we connect to voice on such a visceral level.
Great point. It's very human. It's very emotionally laden. And you're right. Maybe I'll jump to you for your future predictions. What will voice, where will it or where should it go in 5 or 10 years, or kind of like in the longer term? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I have the skill to jump 10 years out, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on 10. But I would say that what feels like to me in the short run is that you see a proliferation right now of a lot more voice assistants, where you have companies that feel that they want something very specific and they might not be getting it from a platform. And so they're going to make their own voice assistant and they're going to be able to sort of push it in this very directed way for this one thing that we can do, and we can do this well, which maybe the way that I earlier described the proposition guide of saying, hey, if this is a limited set and you know what this is, it can work in that space. And companies can work in this limited set of, yes, you can get your bank balance, you can do this, but you can't ask about the weather. Right? It can't do everything. It can't fit those things all together. So I do think that there might be some more narrowing for people to be able to create some of these more use cases where it's like, how can we just do this one thing really well? Right now, Our personal devices turn the lights on, do command and control well, that does that well. The part where we might feel frustrated is if we want to do more than that. We want things to be able to maybe have more context or have not that device. And I'm like, what do you mean by that device? You know, that's too challenging. So I do think that a lot of companies will probably push into these more narrow spaces to be able to come up with things. And it's probably, just to put that out there, I think that the larger platforms are always in this challenge about how much they want third-party developers to create something versus like their vision. The truth is that in an early state like this, I really think that the more people working on it, the more interesting that it would be. Maybe you fail quicker, but you get to somewhere more interesting faster. Doesn't matter how big the team is that's figuring out different ways to say, set my alarm. What we need is other people thinking about other questions at the same time. Right now, the platforms aren't as open to that. And so I feel like it's slowed because of that. And that's why I think, you know, individual companies that will have the resources to be able to develop their own assistant will do that. And then maybe something will take off from there.
It's interesting because I share that thought around that the platforms are too closed and they're, I think the companies want to control, we've been talking about, right? Is the experience good and does it work? And I think they worry about the experience being broken and kind of turning people off to interacting on that device overall. And yet what they're missing is, because I would like voice to be more like the web, right? Like open and that. And the reason I was involved early in the web and saw it grow up, and it was really crappy in the 90s. I mean, people forget how bad it was, right? And it took all these people experimenting in that. And the proverbial guy in this basement did some really cool stuff that a giant company couldn't have done. And I would love to see that in voice is more of opening up the platforms, let people experiment with it. But I don't know how to balance that with the, wow, I do something crazy and wacky and build something in my basement that is really cool and amazing and shows off this tech, but it breaks a lot. And so the problem with a voice assistant is I see it as this individual entity. It's not like a phone. Like on my phone, I launch an app. I think of that app. I don't think my phone's broken if the app breaks. But if I have a voice experience, you know, skills and actions and capsules, I mean, those are essentially apps. But I don't think users differentiate that it's the device is broken, not the individual developer maybe didn't build this. And so our experience and our thinking around that technology and what should and shouldn't work is really different than existing paradigms, I think.
I think you bring up a pretty profound point, because I think it's probably one of the hardest things to differentiate is when you're in a third party skill action capsule versus things sort of blend so much together. I think, and part of that came maybe when we were talking about like synthetic voice, which is like maybe Google has like a reserved voice, right? But it's not that different than the other synthesized voices that you have. So whether you know that you're hearing it from Google or a third one, the Alexa voice, that's the same voice, whether you're doing an Alexa skill or you're doing a third party skill, right? So again, so in that way, the platforms are saying like, look, if you're going to use our voice and you're going to put it, like we're holding it to this certain standard, right? Like it's actually quite challenging to get things released, to put them out, because they want it to not break, not do this. And of course, well, technology breaks, right? That's kind of what happens.
Yeah. Well, and breaking is how it advances too, because you got
it. It is. Yeah. True. Yeah. It's just, we're so used to kind of in a lot of spaces, like magic happening, right? Like it's like, I did a 3D LiDAR scan on my phone the other day in a matter of minutes. I'm like, what kind of world is that? That's the magic world that you're living in, right? So we want that for voice too. So
we do. We have to. It's just not, it's like I said, amazing advances in AI, and we're still like so early. There's so many things that don't work. And it's that kind of tolerance there. I wanted to ask you about one of the things we talked about before the podcast was creating for voice. And right now it's kind of an onerous process, and you write this and you give these examples there, and you code and you have examples of phrases, and hopefully you do a good enough job where the AI matches something. And so it works for the user. But we were talking a little bit about, or you're asking about co-creating with machines. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, right now I am incredibly interested about what is our relationship with sort of technology, and sort of not so much technology just doing something for me, but like what kind of work can come from making new things that don't exist. Right now, I'm incredibly interested in generative artworks that are like prompt-based designs. You see that with OpenAI, like DALL-E 2 or Midjourney. And that, you have this other kind of translation of, so for people that haven't done it, you're writing a prompt, you're describing the image that you want, and then you have tremendous amounts of cloud GPU power thrown at that to be able to do an adversarial network to be able to like, let's create this image and then see what you think. Now, it doesn't really know the object that you're asking for or the description. It's just a model of other people that have sort of described this before, and it's merging these things together. Sometimes you might find it really interesting to see more of the mistakes that AI makes versus the like existential crisis when it's, well, that's perfect, and what am I even doing here anymore? But I do think that when we're looking to the future, what kind of tools are we co-creating with technology, with AI? What's the part that we want to keep like more human? And at the same time, which is the part that we can embrace aspects of AI or technology to sort of push maybe even our own humanness further in contrast? And I think that's an interesting question. For me, a lot of times, a lot of people are like, well, it's just like one replaces the other, right? Like it's, everything becomes the Terminator. Everything, you're no longer part of this. And I think that we have to keep on asking questions. And in that, like, what are tools that we're using? What are processes that we're using that allow us to hold on to that humanness? And where is that going?
I love the art example, because it's such a good one. And I've been thinking a lot about this is, okay, we went from paintbrushes to, and I'm skipping a lot of things, to Procreate on my iPad, where I can go and create art there. And now I can use something like Midjourney, which I played with, and DALL-E, waiting for access to that, to go just describe something, and then something is created for me. I'm sure I'm using Procreate, but there's much earlier examples of digital art. But I'm sure there's articles, this is going to destroy art. This is not art, right? Because I'm using this digital tool. And I'm like, you know what? It's just another think of it as a super advanced paintbrush, right? It's a next generation paintbrush. And so I look at things like Midjourney and DALL-E and et cetera. I'm like, it's a next generation Procreate, right? Or it's the next generation where it's drawing something for you. But then it is a really good question of where does the human begin and end? And if I'm doing a creative work, how important is that where the human begins or ends? I don't know.
I think we could probably spend another lifetime talking about that. But it is the question that I think is really interesting for me. And I think that how we relate to it is equally important, right? It's not just that it's out there, but like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So for someone that paints, the brush, the brushstroke, the gesture, like that's a real connection to them. That's not to say that can't translate to digital or when they're seeing that in digital, that it's evoking those feelings. When I'm looking at that, even not as a painter, I'm also connecting to the essence of whatever that paint stroke was and seeing that. And I get to pick up on all those things where it's like, hey, this isn't just like a perfect pixel. This is the jaggedy brush that Procreate has created. That is like two very different takes on that and the same idea of working with digital. And I think that voice has very similar things where like our voice, your voice, my, like there's parts of that that you hear brings up feelings. Maybe you recognize them, you don't recognize them. And that it can be pretty profound for us. Like to start to bring in such strong, like organic instances into our life, into our digital world, and how does it affect us? And so again, I think the responsibility, like the bar, like of somebody that might have seen like what the 90s were like, to be able to say, okay, it doesn't have to be the blink tag, but if we go to something else, like what's our responsibility here and how are people reacting to it and what does that mean and what's the idea going to the future? Those are all amazing questions to just keep asking.
And probably questions that you and I could spend a lot of time talking about, but for the sake of brevity, I'll say these are totally interesting topics that I think require a lot of pondering and thinking and discussion to figure out. And I don't think anyone's got the answer there. Hey, Lowell, before you go, one question I always like to ask people, I kind of call it my hidden gem question, is what's a voice experience that you just think is super cool and you like, but doesn't get enough recognition or enough people use it? And you can use a KQED one. You know how many people use your KQED voice experiences or one that you use that is useful and interesting and you'd like more people to know about.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to give you a KQED one. And I'm going to give you one that what I love is a storytelling experience. And what I love about it is how it takes advantage of the limits of where voice technology is. So for Stranger Things, there was a voice skill. They might have made it as an action too for Dustin, where you're talking to him on a walkie-talkie. So you're in Stranger Things, you're communicating. It's the idea of sort of extending the idea. This wasn't for this season of Stranger Things. It was for last season. He's asking you questions about, or maybe it was two seasons ago. I can't remember. It's hard to remember time at the moment, but what's interesting about it is he's talking to you on a walkie-talkie. And so while he's communicating with you, it then stops and is waiting for your response, which is exactly how a walkie-talkie works, right? Like both people can't speak at the walkie-talkie at the same time. You have to have that cadence of breaking and listening. The one thing that I always want with voice is I always want to be able to barge in. I always want to be interrupt. I want to be able to speak over the experience. And that part of the device letting you know, now it's your turn to talk, is challenging, right? And that's why it doesn't feel like a conversation, because it's got to be like this and then stop. And then you give that person the chance. What I love about this storytelling was that by using the walkie-talkie, it's built in to know this is your turn to be able to talk to Dustin. And I just thought that was such a brilliant use of using old tech, the idea of like walkie-talkie, and comparing it to where we are. So if you're ever thinking about barge in or how it works and you want to see someone do it really well, I can't remember the name exact project right now, but it's related to Stranger Things. It might be like Where's Dustin, or I can't. It was actually, it was one that Kathy Pearl suggested to me when I was asking for some really great interactive story ideas.
Cool. I'm going to go check that out, actually, and I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put a link to that and a link to a bunch of the KQED skills, by the way, as well. You know, it struck me, I'm like, talking voice assistant is like using a walkie-talkie today, right? Because barge in just largely does not work. There's been some attempts to make it work, but I've talked to some of our AI people. That's a really hard problem to make barge in work. And yet it's so human, right? So it's so natural for voice. So cool, cool stuff. All right. Well, Lowell, kind of wrapping up, if people want to keep in contact with you and or what KQED is doing, what's the best way to do so?
I think we do have an email exploder. That might be, let me just check that I got the right one.
Maybe it could be just go to kqed.com or follow me on Twitter or something like that. Whatever.
Yeah, it could be. I'll get this thing in a second.
Yeah, no worries. Worst comes to worst, you can give a generic answer and I can put, if you send me afterwards in the show.
Oh, now. Okay. I got one for you.
All right. Perfect. Go for it.
So if you want to connect with us and you have like, I've got a thought, I want to share it, you can actually email me at voicelab@kqed.org. It's an email. Whole team gets it. Happy to talk to anybody that has thoughts about that. And of course, you can just go to KQED. We have a lot of really great content. So even if it's not the voice content, there's really a lot to look at there. So just, I can't speak highly enough about what my colleagues at KQED create and how exciting it is to be a part of that organization.
Well, I'm going to echo that because KQED really has done a lot of really cool, one, it's just a cool organization who creates such essential content, but I love the innovation and experiment that you guys have done with voice. We touched on a few today, and I know you've done a lot more there, but definitely I was thinking, we were talking about everybody turns the lights on and off, sets a timer, plays their media. And you guys have done a good job of pushing the boundaries and saying, and sometimes in a way of, okay, we know it's not going to work perfectly, right? Pushing the boundaries of what could be done. So we need more people like you, Lowell, and organizations like KQED who are pushing the boundaries of what we can or can't do with voice. And just experimenting. I think it's awesome. So I just...
Well, that's exciting to hear, Roger. And along with your description of my job, I'm going to put that on there. So
there, you can steal a couple testimonials from me there. Hey, Lowell, I think I first got introduced to you on Voice Lunch. And I was like, oh, I got to talk to this guy. He's just really interesting, fascinating, doing some interesting things. And has this kind of deep philosophical view, which I really appreciate, around voice and technology and humans there. So I was super excited to have you on the show. And you more than lived up to my expectations. So thank you.
Roger, I'm glad you went with the hard questions and not the impossible questions. It was a very fun conversation to have.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Lowell. And that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast, signing off.